Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, broadcasting from Martinsburg, West Virginia, Bolivar, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stasz Jokowski.
And today is July 17th. It's a Monday, 2023, and our theme today is flight. And I bet we have a variety of presentations for you, because there's so many definitions for that word. How are you, Stasz?
Now that I'm speaking to you and John, and I'm on this meeting, I feel better. But for about 11 minutes there, I was pulling my what little hair I had out on the top of my head.
Limbo. You were in limbo for a bit.
I'm going to have to do something. I have to have my iPad checked because I've been having 2 and 3 hour meetings with my editor for the book I'm working on.
Oh, yeah.
And the last one, we had to switch to just a phone call because something's wrong with, I could see the video was fine, but I couldn't hear her and she couldn't hear me.
That's too bad. And
that's the first time it's happened. We've been working together for 2 months now.
I hope you have resolution soon.
I do too.
I want to thank Andy Offutt-Irwin for opening our show with his original composition, Tarry Here. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Andy. Noble soul and gentleman that you are. Are you going to talk about speak today, or do you want me to start with something else?
I'm going to talk about speak, yes.
Okay.
Speak is coming up. Coming up, we have on August 8th, Dolores Hydock, who is a replacement for Elizabeth Rose, who was a replacement for Robert Jones. For some reason, a couple of people had to drop out. Well, Robert Jones was taken to the hospital, and then the date wasn't available. Anyway, Dolores Hydock, August 8th. And then September 12th, Diane Macklin, with her commissioned story that the Speak Story Series commissioned. Sent out invitation to storytellers all over nationally. And Diane Macklin was chosen as the winner to have a chance to perform on Speak with this commissioned piece and to introduce it, a brand new piece. So that'll be September 12th. Okay, so.
Wonderful.
And this past week, Adam Booth performed his newest story, A Myth, The Heron's Journey. And it was absolutely marvelous. We had two very good audiences at the Frank Center. The attendance for that was wonderful. And I got to see the Tuesday one on Zoom, and then the Wednesday performance we went to in person. And I was amazed.
It was wonderful. It was quite the showmanship and the content and the stage settings, the origami birds. It was amazing. It was
And they weren't origami.
Well, I don't have another word for them. What word should I use?
Okay. All right. Well, they were that is some kind of, that's paper sculpture. And it's much different than origami because they're not just folded and stuff like that. So anyway, I heard the term paper sculpture, but anyway, that's not important. Now, if I find a better way to describe that, I will. I will tell you. I was pleased, and once again, I was impressed by Adam's professional abilities and how hard he works to develop his stories.
Absolutely. Well, I was at the Thurmont Library in Maryland on Sunday, yesterday, and telling stories. They have a once a month Sunday storytelling event. And I found out that Adam is going to be telling next month. And I wrote down the date, and if I can find it, I will announce it on the radio at some point today.
And where was that?
Thurmont Library.
Thurmont. Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow. I love that. Neat.
I think it's the 20th. The 20th of August at 2 p.m. And that setting is just beautiful. It's a pretty new library. It's about a decade old, maybe a little older. But they have a beautiful outdoor space, this porch that runs the length of the back of the library, behind which is a wetlands trail circle. And there's wildlife back there. There are these huge ceiling fans on the porch. It's enormous. You could probably seat close to 100 people out there. Mm-hmm. And it's nice. Just lovely. It's the perfect setting for storytelling. And I had a wonderful time. We had about 20 people. And it was very, very, what's that word? Rewarding.
Rewarding, good.
Yeah.
Do you have a time check?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah.
I think we've been talking about 5 minutes, but I had not set my clock yet, so thank you.
Okay.
All right. So. I wanted to talk for a minute about Stories in the Round, because on August 28th, I will be telling at Stories in the Round. Stories about my mother and her career or her time in the Women's Army Corps, as well as her take on a lot of other contemporary events. I'll be portraying her, and I'm really looking forward to that. And then in September, I think you will be one of the tellers for the Liars Contest, the Tall Tale Contest that we're partnering with the Antietam Storytelling Guild on. And that's going to be pretty exciting.
Yes, it is. I'm looking forward to that. And when you're telling your mother's tales, unfortunately, I won't be in attendance for that. And that's because my wife and I are going to be going away for a couple of days. We're going to be celebrating a couple of different events that happened in August, and that date happened to be my birthday.
I am bereft, but I knew that was a possibility because I knew that was your birthday. So
yeah, and
your anniversary this month or next month. So congratulations, and
I will
get over it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I am sorry, and I've heard your mother a few times. So it's not like I'm ignoring your mother.
That's true. You've been a captive audience several times.
Right. Thank
you. Okay. Well, on the theme of flight, would you like to go first?
I would rather not today because I am discombobulated by the beginning 31 minutes of this episode so far.
Okay. Well, I'm going to talk about flight, and I do have a medium-length poem as well that I might do if we have time towards the end.
All right.
So my story is about flight. I was with Eileen Evans this past weekend on Friday. She was hosting a weekend event for the Black Appalachian Storyteller Fellows that are a part of a grant project funded by the National Association of Black Storytellers. And Eileen is part of the committee and helping to organize and support those tellers. When I was there with a teller from Hagerstown, Patricia Smart, we were at Roots and Sky, which is a conference center, a retreat center on Kempton Road outside of Oakland. It's a beautiful spot. We had a lovely time there. And Eileen always insists that everyone present tell stories. And the theme of the event was flight. So I talked a bit about the different meanings of that word. When I started thinking about what I was going to deliver that evening, I realized that there are all kinds of interpretations of that vocabulary. So you can talk about the act of flying. You can talk about an actual scheduled flight or a trip. You can talk about the series of steps between the landings of a building or an outdoor space. So you're walking up a flight to a certain spot on the building. In the military, they talk about a flight group. A group of planes is called a flight. And then there's any rapid movement of any kind, such as an escape or fleeing away. Flight could be another version of that word flee. And of course, we talk about flights of fancy, extraordinary mental feats. And here's a new one for me. The tail of an arrow or a dart is also called a flight. And all of those are nouns, of course, but you can also use the word as a verb, which I had heard before, but it wouldn't have entered my consciousness if I hadn't read it in the dictionary. You can flight into the sky, the flock of ducks flighted north. She flighted her arrow to bring down a soaring goose. And then other examples of meanings, the beleaguered Clan Campbell took flight from the place they had been tormented, abused, and attacked. And a goldfinch took flight from its perch on a wind-tossed echinacea flower. So using that word flight, I decided that because Eileen Evans has been such a wonderful mentor to me and has helped me to develop and frame my existence as a storyteller, I thought I would try to recapture some of that process using that word flight. And I debuted this piece just a couple days ago at the dinner that Eileen prepared for us and welcomed into this resort called Roots and Sky.
My good at Best Buy.
Some of my earliest memories are sitting on my bed with my father, Bill Crawford, listening to him read to me his version of bedtime stories, usually from the manuscript that was left to the family by my father's grandfather, Thomas Henry Barnes, or T.H., as he's called by the family. Now, T.H.'s father was born enslaved near Richmond, Virginia, about 1818, and taken from his family as a very young child by an Englishman calling himself Reverend Barnes. This man came to Virginia from Hagerstown, Maryland, specifically to purchase young Black boys and young Black men and take them back to Hagerstown, to his home there. And in Hagerstown, this small child, my great-great-grandfather Henry, was educated to read, write, and cipher, and then trained as a gardener and a seedman. When Reverend Barnes was on his deathbed, about 1835, he gathered his 19 enslaved Black workmen to his bedside in the middle of the night, gave them their manumission papers, their free papers, and told them to take flight immediately that very night and head north to Canada. He said that when his family, his heirs, discovered that he was releasing all these men from bondage, that slave hunters, federal marshals, and his younger male relations would pursue them with intensity and towards the goal of returning them to bondage. Well, my great-great-grandfather Henry survived that flight and went on to marry and raise a family that included my father's grandfather, T.H. Barnes. And in that story, my father first told me so long ago, I was 4 or 5 years old, he said that when the small boy Henry was taken from his family, a woman he remembered as his mother gave him a child-sized quilt to take away with him. My dad said she gave him that quilt so that he would remember where he came from. I heard that story multiple times from my dad over the years, and I heard it again at different times in slightly different versions from other family members. So that little boy Henry in the story became part of me. He's really inside of me, in my head, in my heart. In 1967, I left my parents in Philadelphia, West Philly, where I grew up, across the street from Fairmount Park, 5 blocks from the Philadelphia Zoo, if you know where that is, to take my first flight, which was an airplane ride from Philadelphia Airport to O'Hare in Chicago. I lived on the south side of Chicago for 4 years, a little more than 4 years, going to college, although it actually took me 14 years to finish my degree, but that's a whole other story. During the decade that I lived there, I had mixed thoughts and feelings about Chicago. I loved being at the university. I loved all the amazing people that I met. I loved the neighborhoods. I loved the opportunities, the new experiences I had, both in the Loop downtown, but also in a lot of different neighborhoods throughout the city. But after that, or towards the end of that time, I knew that I was not going to live in Chicago much longer. It was too intense for me, and the climate was insane. It really wreaked havoc with my health, the intense heat and humidity in the summertime, and bitter cold and wind. It was the wind, the lake effect, that was toughest on me. So over the next few years, I moved about a bit, but the arrows that I flighted with the truest trajectories were those that brought me to Hagerstown, Maryland, a small city that I'd been hearing about for decades and finally settled here 32 years ago. T.H. Barnes, Thomas Henry Barnes, the son of that little Black boy Henry, was born in Lewistown, Pennsylvania, where his father married and raised his family after that traumatic escape out of slavery from Hagerstown. T.H. had an interesting life himself, and that's a story for another day. That's chronicled, of course, in that manuscript that my father read to me so many years ago. We have a published version of that manuscript now that includes Henry's story, as well as the record of the life of his son, T.H. Barnes. T.H. took flight from Lewistown, Pennsylvania, to Brooklyn, New York, to Manhattan, and the New York Colored Orphans Asylum after the death of Henry and Jane, my great-great-grandmother. And then T.H. became a barber and eventually moved his family to Olean, New York. which, if you're not familiar with the southern tier of upstate New York, is near Jamestown, Buffalo, Rochester. TH became the patriarch of my extended family, and our 2023 annual reunion will be there in Olean again this year, the first weekend in August. There are usually 100 or so of us descendants who attend, and I will be there. I'm sad to say my brother and his extended family will miss this reunion because they will be flying home from 3 weeks in New Zealand and the Women's World Soccer Cup just the day before. I have not quite forgiven him yet. They are going to come at Thanksgiving with my nieces, so I will get over it, but I'm pretty grumpy about it right now. When I took my own fateful United Airlines flight from Philadelphia to Chicago in 1967, I knew in my heart that I was not leaving Philadelphia for good. My parents were still there in West Philly, but I didn't understand till much later, the turn of the century actually, how important Philadelphia is to me. When my parents decided it was time to move to sell their house and move to a retirement home in Germantown at the other side of Philadelphia, they sent me photos of the preservation and curation of their dining room walls. They moved there in 67. And they moved out in 99. So 24 years, something like that. They lived in that house.
32.
Okay. Thank you for doing the math for those of us who are challenged. My dad had spent those 32 years putting up political posters and art posters and clippings from the newspaper, headlines from the newspapers, cartoons from the funny papers and from political publications, lots of photographs of important personages, focused mostly on radical politics and Black activism, the civil rights movement, and beyond. But he literally covered most of their small dining room with this memorabilia that was important to him. Some of it very amusing, some of it sad, some of it a bit overwhelming. And when they were getting ready to move, they sent me photos of the preservation and curation of their dining room walls. That was done by the Philadelphia Folklore Project, which was a relatively new at that time group, not-for-profit organization dedicated to preserving the political and folk culture of neighborhoods in Philadelphia. And those dining room walls were rolled up. It was a horsehair plaster. The walls were horsehair plaster with decades and decades of wallpaper over top. And the curators just came in and stripped the walls down, rolled them up, and took them back to the new building where the Philadelphia Folklore Project had just ensconced itself. And they put those walls back up in the conference room there. And I have visited that space many, many times. It's quite surreal to be sitting in my parents' dining room. They have included in the conference room my parents' kitchen table and the vinyl covered steel chairs that we sat on in the kitchen for many, many years, repaired with duct tape just as my father left them. Obviously that event, the curation of the dining room walls, was a big deal to both my parents. The construction was mostly my dad's, but my mother was an archivist, a librarian who managed the Templana archives at Temple University. So the Philadelphia Folklore Project's acknowledgement of my dad's construction of those dining room walls as folk art was not just a revelation, but an honor for both of them. And they were pretty excited about it. I was pretty excited about it. I have visited that conference room mostly for special events. The grand opening of the Philadelphia Folklore Project's renovated building went soon after they moved in there. That conference room is known to all my family and friends as Bill and Miriam's dining room. I attended a storytelling event there and spotlighted stories about my parents, and have been there whenever important personages come to Philadelphia that I want to be sure they see that space. I drive up there and we do a little tour of the Philadelphia Folklore Project. So I'll probably never let go of Philadelphia either, just as I still have warm feelings for Chicago in spite of the climate. And there are other sites that constitute the locales and setting for my origin story, but we'll leave it at that. But the newest meaning of flight in my vocabulary since this request from Eileen for stories about flight is a flight of glasses. If you've been to a modern setting, bar or tavern or even a restaurant, you might have experienced this yourself. But beer or wine is often brought to you on a small tray, and that's called a flight of whatever you've ordered, a flight of beer, for example. So at that dinner on Friday evening, I asked the group to raise their glasses to all the folk arts represented in that room that evening on Friday, and to the Black Appalachian Storytellers Fellowship for helping each of us to tell our stories, and especially to Eileen for helping me figure out how I personally fit into this Black Appalachian epic that she is part of putting together. So that's my entry story for the day.
Wow. That's something. Thank you.
It was fun. I was stymied for a bit before I figured out what I wanted to talk about. So it's a good theme.
Yeah. I was trying to figure I lost count of how long that was. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Looking at the clock, it seems to have been just under 20 minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. Thanks. I agree.
Okay.
I just wasn't sure about where I am in my digital world here.
Yeah.
So
I do want to tell our listeners that they have tuned in to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Hagerstown, Maryland, and Martinsburg, West Virginia. Our theme today is flight. And we're glad you're here with us.
Well, I guess it's my turn.
It certainly is.
Right. Okay. So, the first time I ever got onto an airplane to take a flight, I was in Germany. I had joined the army in 1959, and during the summer of 1959, July 31st actually, and then only traveling I ever did then was either by car or when I joined the Army, I got on a train to go down to South Carolina. Then at the end of basic training, instead of having a leave, I got on a train and went to Texas. And then um, go home at Christmas time, which was the first time I would see my family from July 31st until December 24th, 25th. I rode another train to go home, and then back to Texas. And finally, in 1961, in August, at the end of August, beginning of September, I traveled by boat. In 1960, I traveled by boat to Germany. And from September of 1960 to December of 1961, I was working in Germany as a radar person in a Nike Ajax missile outfit. I got the opportunity to take an airplane flight to the United States from Germany, from Frankfurt to Baltimore, where I was met by my parents and my older brother Tony, and I was home on a visit. That extended from before Christmas to into January of 1962. That was a very scary event for me because I had never been on an airplane before, and as it turned out, we had assigned seats, and when I got to my seat, I had the middle seat, and I sat between the nun and the priest. The priest was at the window, the nun was at the aisle, and of course, I was traveling in uniform. They welcomed me, and as we were getting ready to take off, we had a few minutes while the rest of the people were boarding the plane, and in conversation, the two the two religious individuals noticed that I seemed to be a bit apprehensive, and we had a good laugh when they began talking to me about it and said, I shouldn't have to worry anything because I was seated between two of God's servants, and they were sure that I would be fine. And they would even say an extra little prayer that we would have a safe flight. And we did have a safe flight. It was exciting in the takeoff. And then during some kind of feisty weather over the Atlantic Ocean. And then when we got to Baltimore, the landing was very, very interesting. Having a 707 airplane. Now the numbers go all the way up to 707. 77, maybe 787, something like that. But it was a monstrous airplane. Now it would not be considered so very big, because there have been many more of those commercial kind of airplanes that now go back and forth across the the world, actually. And so I survived my very first flight. And without being smart aleck, I will give credit to the priest and the nun, father and sister, who were so kind to me. And as I sat shaking in that Boeing 707, I think it was a Boeing. The very next time I flew was in July of 1962. It was a very sad day. I was supposed to get on a boat from Bremerhaven on July 7th, and I got to the shipyard with a number of other soldiers. There was an Air Force sergeant reading the names off of orders and telegrams, and he paused at one point and said, "These so-and-so Polish names." And I said, "Can't read Polish?" He looked down at me. He was standing on a mobile platform. Said, "No, can you?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He handed a telegram to me, and it was addressed to me. I read out the name, and he said, "Wow." And I said, "It was easy, because it's been my name all my life." And I had instructions to go to the Red Cross office there, and I did, and I was told that my mother was ill and rushed to the hospital, and I should return to Frankfurt, and I would be getting a flight home. That day, that was possibly the saddest flight I've ever been involved in my life. Because I was worried about my mother, and I was feeling guilty. Was the last time she and I had spoken was in January of 1962 at the airport when I was going back to Germany. And she and I had a disagreement about some words she had used to describe a young woman I had visited while I was home on leave. And I raised my voice speaking to my mother. And for long time after that, starting with sitting on that plane on the way home, worrying about my mother and stupid I'd been in the way I talked to her last time we were face to face. And for many years after that, I did not have an easy time whenever I thought about my mother, because she died that day. And I was actually flying home on Sunday, July 8th. She had died the day before, July 7th. I didn't find it out until I got home in my house in Baltimore. And the car I'd been picked up from railroad station after flying into New York and then riding a train down to Baltimore. I was picked up at the railroad station, and when we stopped in front of my house, as I got out of the car, I got to look up at the front door of the house, which had a black tape on it. It was a bad flight, as far as I know. The next time I flew in a plane was a much better experience, although it was truly, truly scary. a wonderful friend, teacher, a mentor to me in some ways, an older teacher by the name of Mr. Rickett. Owned a World War II two-seater plane. That's I called it a two-seater, but it was for two seats in the cockpit, and then there was a little tiny seat behind those two seats. And anyway, he invited me a number of times to go for a ride in his plane, and I still had a good bit of worry in my body about flying, especially when he showed me a picture of the plane. It was a tiny, tiny little thing. But he was a really nice man, and he was a good friend, and he and I, we did a lot of things together with the faculty groups. And so I agreed. And one afternoon, on a Wednesday afternoon, I asked my assistant track coach to take care of practice, and I met Mr. Ricketts, and we drove to the airfield, which turned out to be a large, flat area, a grassy field, well maintained, with a couple of airplanes parked near small metal hangar, I think it was. So that's what you would call it. And it was kind of like a little room at the end of that hangar. And there was an office there where he signed in a log book that he was going to take the plane out on flight. It was really a private field in an airfield. I don't remember the words in the sign that was pasted on the outside of the door. It was actually a sign that was painted there. It had a number of reminders about what you're about to do. And I read that. Mr. Ricketts required that of all people who flew with him. We got in, seat belts, stuff like that. And I sat, of course, in passenger seat, he said, in the pilot seat, but both seats had the ability to control the plane. I don't know what kind of plane it was. I don't even remember. But so I was sitting on the right side, and there was a control wheel in front of me, like a driver's wheel. And he had one in front of him. He was on our side. He went through a list of things before we could start. Once he fired the ignition, James Mother took off, laid in front of the plane, propeller spinning like crazy. And we rolled slowly at first on this field. And as we were rolling towards the other end of the field, I realized that the field was going to end. And in fact, the field did end. And the world, as we got to the edge of the field, the world that the wheels of the plane were riding on disappeared. And we went over a large valley, and the plane slowly rose into the sky. Ricketts knew where I lived, but he knew lots of things about all the geographical places he could see once he got up in his plane. And in a few minutes, we were flying over 24 East Deep Run Road, which was the home that I had bought in 1974. And Mr. Ricketts purposely flew the plane exactly 1 mile above my house and pointed out to me that now we were exactly 1 mile above my driveway and the house. And he did that on purpose since I was a track coach, and 1 mile was a special existence. And that was one of the most amazing days or afternoons I spent with a wonderful friend, a man who loved to sing, played the piano in his classroom and sang World War I fight songs and all kinds of songs from musicals to entertain the students that he taught, his social studies teacher. And although things have changed, starting in 1996, I have taken many, 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 many flights to different parts of the country. The furthest in the United States was to Oregon to visit friends of ours, my wife Terry Lee and I. And also we flew to Europe, to Poland in 2016. And since 1996, I have probably taken at least one airplane flight every year, or almost every year, to someplace in the United States. Up to Connecticut to be able to visit my daughter who lives in Massachusetts, down to Florida for vacations, out to Texas to visit Jane and Victor, out to Salt Lake City to visit Peter, and then Peter and Amanda, and then Peter and Amanda and Grace and Matthew, my wife's son Peter and his wife Amanda and their two children. And I'm no longer afraid of flying. Thank you. Are you still there, Penny?
Wow. Yes. That was great, Stosh.
That was a travel walk.
Yeah, I now have a chronology of a good chunk of your life.
Yeah.
In the air.
And I left out a bit after Mr. Ricketts to 1996. There were a couple other flights I did, but I didn't think they were as interesting as any of those. So thank you.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. Huh. So I'm not sure, but I think we've been on the show for about 50 minutes.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Shall I do a poem? Or do you want to do something
yes. else? No, you go ahead.
Okay, this
I'm blown
is
out.
All right. This is To a Skylark by Percy Bysshe Shelley. That I'm still,
cool.
I've read it a few times in the past, but I'm not I'm still learning this poem. So I don't mean memorizing it. I'm still understanding it, but
okay.
I'm enjoying it. Hail to thee, blithe spirit, bird thou never wert, that from heaven or near it pourest thy full heart in profuse strains of unpremeditated art. Higher still and higher from the earth thou springest like a cloud of fire. The blue deep thou wingest, and singing still dost soar, and soaring ever singest. In the golden lightning of the sunken sun, o'er which clouds are brightening, thou dost float and run like an unbodied joy whose race is just begun. The pale purple even melts around thy flight, like a star of heaven in the broad daylight. Thou art unseen, but yet I hear thy shrill delight. Keen as are the arrows of that silver spear, whose intense lamp narrows in the white dawn clear until we hardly see, we feel that it is there. All the earth and air with thy voice is loud, as when night is bare, from one lonely cloud the moon rains out her beams, and heaven is overflowed. What thou art, we know not. What is most like thee? From rainbow clouds there flow not drops so bright to see as from thy presence showers a rain of melody. Like a poet hidden in a light of thought, singing hymns unbidden, till the world is wrought to sympathy with hopes and fears it heeded not. Like a high-born maiden in a palace tower, soothing her love-laden soul in secret hour with music, sweet as love which overflows her bower. Like a glowworm, golden in a dell of dew, scattering unbeholden its aerial hue among the flowers and grass which screen it from the view. Like a rose embowered in its own green leaves, by warm winds deflowered till the scent it gives makes faint with too much sweet those heavy winged thieves. Sound of vernal showers on the twinkling grass, rain awakened flowers, all that ever was joyous and clear and fresh, thy music doth surpass. Teach us, sprite or bird, what sweet thoughts are thine. I have never heard praise of love or wine that panted forth a flood of rapture so divine. Chorus hymeneal or triumphal chant matched with thine would be all but an empty vaunt, a thing wherein we feel there is some hidden want. What objects are the fountains of thy happy strain? What fields or waves or mountains? What shapes of sky or plain? What love of thine own kind? What ignorance of pain? With thy clear, keen joyance, languor cannot be. Shadow of annoyance never came near thee. Thou lovest, but never knew love's sad satiety. Waking or asleep, thou of death must deem things more true and deep than we mortals dream, or how could thy notes flow in such a crystal stream? We look before and after and pine for what is not. Our sincerest laughter with some pain is fraught. Our sweetest songs are those that tell of saddest thought. Yet if we could scorn hate and pride and fear, if we were things born not to shed a tear, I know not how thy joy we ever should come near. Better than all measures of delightful sound, better than all treasures that in books are found, this thy skill to poet were, thou scorner of the ground. Teach me half the gladness that thy brain must know. Such harmonious madness from my lips would flow. The world should listen then, as I am listening now.
Wow.
Wonderful.
As you were reading, I was trying to pay close attention to all the words.
Yeah.
I'm sure I missed a lot of them only because I was thinking, what did that mean? What did that
mean? I know. It is convoluted.
And so I thought, I would like to see, I'll have to look that up. And what was the title of it?
To a Skylark.
Oh, To a Skylark. Okay.
Yeah, it might be one of Shelley's most famous poems because I had read it in the past, but never focused on it. We have so many birds around us, and they're winging all over our yard and our neighbors' yards, and we have nests in trees. We have three separate nests, a wren's nest and two robin's nests, and we have babies that we can see in one of the robin's nests. It's up in the eaves of our gazebo, And they are the strangest looking little dinosaurs, those little babies. They sit there all day long with their mouths open. They're now a little past that stage. So their beaks are now closed, but they are the oddest looking things. Now their eyes are still not open, but they look a little bit more like babies that you might want to nurture. Before that, they were just odd little reptiles.
Wow. Well, you know, it's nice the way you describe that, your place, because we feel a lot of that here. Terry and I sit out on our back patio and I have coffee in the morning there, most mornings, and then sometimes we have a drink in the evening there. And just yesterday, we remarked a number of times about the many different kind of birds that are in the trees and the bushes right in front of us, and how lucky we are to have such beautiful animals to entertain us. Harry has a nice bowl that she set up in the top of a, he set it atop of a pottery thing that is meant for having flowers planted in it, but she set this bowl in there and filled it with water, and the birds, it's a bird bath. Mm-hmm. The birds come and have a drink, and it's really wonderful. And I liked your description of your place, because I think if it's what we would say about our place, we even have a birdhouse that is right on the little back porch off the kitchen, and we have seen the tiniest little birds going in and out over a period of a month.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
They're quite entertaining and inspiring. It's really interesting to have them. The robins that are caring for the babies in the gazebo, they're not there a lot. The babies are by themselves for most of the day. Mm-hmm. But when they are there, we often startle them by coming too close to the gazebo or even going into the gazebo. I try to stay away, but I forget, or I have something I need up there. There's storage up there. It's interesting, but they explode out of the nest when they take flight. Yeah. And it's fun to see them. They're not afraid of us. They follow us around, even. They're very interested when we're watering plants or filling the bird bath or using the hose at any point. And they have all their little favorite places they go to look for bugs when we're mowing. They follow behind us, eating bugs.
We have some trees where we rent this house. There are trees on one side of the house. They are apples and an apple tree and a tree, I believe, with plums on it. And then off the back patio, there are a couple of trees with peaches. And it is amazing to see the birds eating the peaches, the squirrels, like climb up and grab the peaches and drop them to the ground and then go down and get them in their mouth and go off.
Wow.
and I can sit right where I'm sitting now. I can look out the side window onto John Street where the apple tree is, and I have watched large birds sit into the tree, and smaller birds sit into the tree and peck at the apples. And sometimes if you go outside and look onto the ground, there are lots of those fruits that have been knocked to the ground because they've been partly eaten or knocked off the tree. It's interesting that we have all this nice fruit for the birds, which we didn't plant, the owner of the house did. And it's been fun to watch.
I'm going to close out the show. Thank you, Scott.
All right.
This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stasz Ziolkowski.
Your co-hosts for the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. We are independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Martinsburg, West Virginia, Hagerstown, Maryland. And we're at the end of this week's show. We're offering listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for...
Wait a minute. One more announcement. Don't you have to say something about Stories in the Round next week?
I did. I said that next week I am telling my mother's story. I'm sorry, Jane Dorfman. Did mm-hmm. I did talk about Jane Dorfman, didn't I? No?
No.
Jane Dorfman is doing Calamity Jane on the 24th
right.
of okay. July. Thank you, Stasz.
Oh, you're welcome. I actually was taking notes today, and I wrote a note. Don't forget, Jane.
Okay.
Good.
Well, I was going to play.
What's coming up, John?
I was going to play smooth jazz, but I got a request from, you know, a friend to play Led Zeppelin. So we're going to have a little Zeppelin fest for an hour or so, and then
there you go.
We'll go back to smooth jazz, I think.
diversity.
Right, I'm going to try to figure out my iPad before next week.
All right, good luck.
Soon.
Okay. All right.
John, I like your little short poem. I wish I could remain as firmly planted in midair as the Skylark.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Take
Bye-bye,
care.
Guys.